Hello and welcome to The Whole Health Cure, a space for trustworthy, science-based information on how you can live healthier, longer, and happier. I'm your host, Dr. Sharon Berquist, a physician and scientist with over 25 years of experience in clinical care and a mission to empower people to live their best life. If you're like most people, at some point you've likely searched Google with a health question. Maybe you've done more, joined communities, or even posted your own experience. In either case, you may be part of a patient-led revolution in health, which is our topic today. I'm joined by Susanna Fox, who's a health and technology strategist whose life's work has been to explore and map the terrain created by patients, survivors, and caregivers. She passionately believes that open access to information, data, and tools can help patients make better decisions and catalyze healthcare innovation. Her recent book, Rebel Health, A Field Guide to the Patient-Led Revolution in Medical Care, published by MIT Press in 2024, showcases how consumers are building up our collective capacity for better health and how the healthcare ecosystem can leverage the power of connection with those they serve. She's a former chief technology officer for the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, where she led an open data and innovation lab. She has served as the entrepreneur in residence at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and she directed the health portfolio at the Pew Research Center's Internet Project, where she researched the intersection of health, social media, and patient engagement, and first coined the phrase peer-to-peer healthcare. As an internet geologist, she also advises organizations, big and small, nonprofit and for-profit, on how to navigate the intersection of health and technology, targeting areas of the healthcare system that need to work better for patients, survivors, and caregivers. Susanna, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
I'm really excited about your perspective in having this conversation. You've had decades of experience in field work. From all the notes you've taken, all the people you've tracked over the years, and all the interactions you've had with the healthcare system, what are major themes that you've noticed?
What I have observed is that when mainstream healthcare falls short for people for various reasons, peer-to-peer healthcare can fill in the gaps. And that can be beneficial on a personal level. If someone is faced with a rare or life-changing diagnosis and they feel alone, now they can go online and not only consult Dr. Google, the de facto second opinion in the US, probably all over the world, they can also get connected with other people like them. And that can make all the difference. The other message is that there are systemic problems where mainstream healthcare falls short. And again, peer-to-peer healthcare can help all of us, no matter what mission we're on. There is this underground patient-led revolution, which can help us with innovation in pharmaceutical, device innovation, healthcare delivery, you name it. I probably have a story about how patients can help.
Susanna, the term peer-to-peer, when you use that, what do you mean by that?
That comes from my roots in technology, in that I was a startup kid in the 90s. I built websites. And even before that, my dad was an engineer who loved code. And so I grew up understanding that the usual way of constructing a network, the old way was that it was like a top-down model. And the internet created peer-to-peer networking, which is what is so special about the internet. And then when I started doing field work in communities of people living with rare diseases, I noticed that, again, there was a democratization of access to information in those communities that reminded me of the democratization of access that the internet given all of us. And so I came up with this phrase, peer-to-peer healthcare, to show that this was a new way of pursuing health that was community-led. And again, it was breaking down this power dynamic where it used to be that clinicians had all of the information and all of the power, all of the access to data. And the internet has broken that open and shown us that patients themselves also have information that science can learn from.
you know, that resonates because as long as I've been in healthcare, certainly there's been a shift towards a more what we term paternalistic approach to care, i.e. doctors just tell patients what to do, to getting patients more engaged in their own decision-making. That's kind of been progressive over decades. And yet what you're pointing out is really one step further, because no matter how much I engage patients, if they have a rare disease, the ability of somebody who's a peer who has the lived experience that is similar, has dealt with the same issues, problem solved some unique solution, access some resource, the power of that connection is yet one step further from what a person can get from a health system. That really brings the question, what are the strengths and weaknesses within getting the care through the health system? And of course, similarly with the internet and Google, I mean, there's so much information, right? You can go down rabbit holes, you can get information that may not be reliable and you're worse off. How do we navigate these spaces?
We can start by acknowledging that this underground system exists. And just as we have been forced to acknowledge that people are using the internet to search for information, what I want to shine a spotlight on is that people are also seeking community. And it can be a force for good and it can be a force for evil. I want to acknowledge right up front that just as good information can spread in networks, misinformation and disinformation can spread as well. And what I always like to do is remind people, misinformation is a mistake. Disinformation is on purpose. And both can be harmful. We need a whole of society response to, frankly, this whole of society threat that misinformation and disinformation present to us, especially in healthcare. I'm going to put a pin on that for a second and say that something that I have observed is that when people feel shut out or left out, or they feel invisible, it's often a community that can come forward. And sometimes the community is just one other person. And that person can say, I see you. I've been there. You are not alone. And just those words can make a difference to someone. Even better, I've been down this part of the healthcare maze before, and I'm going to share my map with you. I know about a clinical trial. I know about a really great new assistive device. I know about a doctor who might be able to listen in a way that they can finally hear what's going on with you. That's the kind of wisdom and guidance that peer-to-peer healthcare can unlock.
In terms of, you know, it makes me think, how can we bring the two together, right? So there are, you know, as you've acknowledged, cracks in the system, certainly for people with rare diseases, because whether they get adequate funding, there's enough research in that area, whether they can access a sub-specialist in that area, there's so many limitations. And even then, treating a condition is one part, but living with that condition is yet a different part of feeling good and feeling like you're getting traction. How can a person kind of navigate and get the best of both?
What I featured in my book are stories where people are pro-science and pro-social. So the patient-led revolution is not one that is happening in opposition to clinical help and or in opposition to science. It's showing that there's so much more to health and so much more to life than what is practiced in the clinic and what is discovered in a lab. And while a lot of my insights came initially from my fieldwork in rare disease communities, I have seen the same patterns in more common conditions. Because when a diagnosis or a challenge is happening to you, for the first time, it feels rare. You can feel alone. And there might be mysteries in your own life that a doctor can help with, and there might be mysteries that you actually need to conduct your own personal science. As you know, so much can be solved if we get a good night's sleep and some good meals in us and stay hydrated. A lot of this stuff is pretty straightforward, and yet we can't talk about all of those things in the 15 minutes that we have with a clinician. So where do people learn about both the far frontier edge science and the home truths that can actually really make a difference in our lives? What peer-to-peer healthcare shows us and the patient-led revolution promises is that doctors don't have to do this alone. It's not just up to the clinicians. There is so much wisdom in community that people can tap into for their well-being.
I think, Susanna, what you just said is going to be increasingly important going forward. I think the health system is strained in terms of access. And I think patient empowerment is going to be such a critical part of having people just stay healthy, that I think learning what you are just pointing out is going to be a skill, really, a very needed skill. So I think that need for community, you know, has been there for as long as I think we've been species on this planet. This is really the modern day version of how we look for community and learn from community and learn from each other. You map out four categories of groups that are in this peer-led revolution. Can you walk us through that?
Sure. And I loved coming up with these names because I wanted them to be names that made sense to people and that people could say, okay, I have this kind of a problem. I now know that I need to gain this skill. So let me walk through it. The first group that I talk about are seekers. Seekers are people who are not getting answers to their questions. They may be having mysterious symptoms. They may not understand a diagnosis, and they go on the hunt for information and they don't give up. That's probably the most important thing to know about seekers, is that they do not give up. The second group are networkers. Networkers learn in community. They find great stuff and they share it in community. They are likely to pool resources. They're the most visible members of the patient-led revolution because they're using social media to elevate their voices and to claw their way out of invisibility. The third group are solvers. Solvers are people who, if they encounter something that's not working, whether it's a medical device, an assistive device, or a system that they encounter, they can't wait to take it apart and put it back together again. Solvers are inventors, and they attack problems. The fourth group are champions. Champions are people who recognize a scrappy, peer-led team that has a great idea, and they get them the resources that they need to bring it to scale. A champion can be someone who has access to funding or labs and manufacturing facilities. A champion could also be a journalist who throws a spotlight of the media on an activity that patients are doing that really deserves more attention. And what I love to talk about is how, if a patient is newly diagnosed and they're too stunned or exhausted to even think about joining this revolution, please know that you don't have to do this alone. You might be able to just identify a problem and ask someone else in your life, please join a community and see what you can find out. Or, I know that this assistive device isn't working for me. A solver in your life might be able to help you. And we all have the opportunity to be champions in various ways.
Are most people one of these categories, seekers, networkers, solvers, or champions, or are most people hybrids?
Well, what I did was I did 100 fresh interviews with people after I came up with the categories, looking back at 20 years of field notes and interviews. What I found in interviewing 100 people and asking them what they thought of these categories, there were lots of people who were multiples. I was very intrigued as a practically diagnosable extrovert. I was very intrigued to find how many people were seekers and solvers who were not networkers, who had solved a problem for themselves or who had found the information that they needed and they didn't share it. And that was really intriguing to me because I think there's an opportunity to make sure that it is incredibly easy to share an invention or an innovation. I think that is a frontier of the patient-led revolution that I'd love to talk more about because not everybody is a networker. Not everybody is going to be into sharing their ideas.
And yet, if a person isn't, would they, like, what would be a way to get a person to be a networker who isn't naturally one? Or do they need to be? Do they identify someone who is? Or what would be your advice on that?
Well, I would think about what is the problem that you're trying to solve. And this goes toward whether you are facing a personal health challenge as a caregiver or as a patient, or whether you are a healthcare leader. What is the problem that you're trying to solve? And how might you either become or partner with a seeker, networker, solver, or champion to solve that problem? For example, if you think about a patient who has a new diagnosis that they don't yet understand, that is when a seeker needs to go out and find information. They need to find that medical journal article, and they need to maybe go on a search for a certain device. If you are a healthcare leader who actually has a new device or has a treatment that you want to make sure people know about in a certain community, you need to partner with networkers. Networkers are the people who know how to get the word out. And that's the sort of problem-solving mentality that I think we need to see more of. And I want people to tap into the energy of the patient-led revolution to accomplish their missions.
And I want to go through more specific scenarios around what you just identified, because I think it's really helpful to just walk through this. Let's start with a patient scenario. So let's say you are a patient, you just have been told, let's start with something that's more common, and then we can also do a scenario with more rare disease. But let's say you've just been told that you have early signs of heart disease. Obviously alarming, and naturally a person wants to know, well, what do I need to do in addition to whatever was recommended in the doctor's office? What would be the next step for that person?
The next step for that person would be to identify the questions that they have and whether they think they can get those answers from a clinician or whether some of the questions that they have would really best be answered by a peer patient. Some questions that patients have require lived experience. Often what I found in my field work is that when people were trying to decide between treatments, then their first stop was a clinician. But in terms of how to live with a certain treatment or live with a certain diagnosis, they needed to become a networker. Or again, it can be a caregiver who becomes a networker on your behalf. If you just want to focus on your own wellness journey, if you've got something acute that you're dealing with, you can ask someone in your life to go out and look to see if there's a community that is discussing this challenge, like heart disease.
As a person gets further into their search as a seeker, invariably it gets overwhelming, right? I mean, you type in heart disease and I presume thousands of sites are going to appear. Do you have any tools or advice on how to not get overwhelmed and to feel like you're accessing what you need?
It's a challenge in any information environment, and particularly something so important as health. what I have seen people do is, again, assign someone else to do the editing for them. So if you know that you're going to go online and just go down a rabbit hole, whether it's in a community, whether it's on a Reddit, a subreddit about your condition, if you know that that is just going to become overwhelming, then you can ask a friend or someone in your family to do that work for you. And since they are maybe one step removed, they will be more likely to be able to edit that information for you. I often say that good curated, community-led information is the new covered dish that somebody could bring to a bedside. That really would be a gift that would be difficult to repay if you are able to give someone answers to questions that they have.
And if we took the scenario of someone with a rare condition, so there's almost the opposite problem. There's so little information that it may be challenging for them to find something that's valuable for them. What advice or tips or suggestions would you have in that scenario?
You would be surprised at how people are able to find each other online. There might be a 1 in a million rare disease, but that means there's an awful lot of them worldwide. And I love to share stories about how people were unexpectedly able to find a community. That is certainly true for a certain category of question that you might have that is very specific to the rare disease that you, or very often a child in your family, is dealing with. What's also important is to understand the commonalities among rare diseases, the challenges that can be found across multiple rare diseases, and therefore joining an organization or following organizations that focus on rare disease can often give you ideas for discovery and advocacy and living in community, talking to, for example, school administrators about your child with a rare disease. And here I'm thinking about an organization like Global Genes. I'm also thinking about Rare Disease Day at NIH, which is held every year on February 28th, or on Leap Day, February 29th, the rarest day of the year. And that's when I see people living with rare disease, as well as scientists and clinicians, coming together in community and realizing that there's so much to learn peer-to-peer, not only from your own rare disease group, but across all rare diseases.
And right now, it seems like there's not a good merging of, you know, you have, as you mentioned, clinicians who may say, here's your diagnosis, here's what you should do. And then you have peer-to-peer. But outside the healthcare space, there isn't a whole lot of communication between the health system and the peer-to-peer. You know, it seems logical that the way forward would be to try and bring those closer together. But what are your thoughts about that?
What I'm excited about is noticing there are pockets where the connection has been made. How do we learn lessons from those examples and help those small flames to spread? And here I'm thinking, for example, about in oncology, there are examples where patients are given a seat at the table when designing a clinical trial. And therefore, the patients say, here's what's important to our community. And scientists and clinicians who don't actually live with that type of cancer or haven't gone through that type of treatment understand the patient's concerns. And there's been some really great examples where there's been progress made and real science progress because of the patient input. So that's one example in bench science. The other example that I'm thinking of is one that is in treatment of pediatric gastroenterology issues. So ulcerative colitis, for example, there's a network called Improve Care Now, where it's a network of clinicians who share best practices, that is paired with a network of families who have kids with ulcerative colitis and IBD. And the home care is as important as the clinical care in living with these conditions. So if there is progress made in home care, the parents and the families are sharing that, and there's an intake valve in the clinical space for the insights from home, just as there is a valve for intake from the clinical space to home. So this knitting together of home care and clinical care, how might we spread that idea? How might we make sure that all of the knowledge that happens at home is documented and shared, not only in community with the lucky people who find other parents of children with ulcerative colitis? That's the state of play for most conditions and diseases. How do we make sure that clinicians are learning from these communities? That's what I'm super excited about.
You know, as a physician in the system, I also think clearly, as being a proponent of prevention, one of the demands that are consumer-driven on the healthcare system is more on prevention of chronic disease. The system, as you know, many people have pointed out, historically was not designed for chronic disease. It was designed for acute disease management. And there's certainly a lack of sufficient resources, which are largely driven by choices, mindset, behaviors that we make to avoid these diseases. And I've, you know, long felt that that should be a bigger part of what is incorporated in the health system, because being in academics, we are theoretically trying to lead in certain areas of medicine, and this is not one where we've done a great job leading, and that's a gap that I've really sought hard to try and be a part of the solution. Our conversation also makes me ask, well, how much should be done within a health system, and what can be actually done better, peer-to-peer or in an online space, in a digital space, because the intersection of patients with the health system is so episodic. And to make these types of big changes in habits and behavior, there needs to be continuous touches. So it's really begging the question, is it even optimal to have this be within the scope of a health system, or should it be, hey, we're going to work together, but you big health system, you're really good at XYZ. And you know what? The tools and technology that are already there in this patient-led revolution is the infrastructure for what we need for prevention. Where do you see that?
What I see in the landscape are areas where peer-to-peer healthcare is so obviously better than clinical care that people acknowledge it. And I'm thinking here about substance use disorder recovery. Peer-to-peer is very much acknowledged to be important and part of that. Serious mental illness support, family support, eating disorder recovery. When we acknowledge that when someone is in recovery from eating disorder, there is an element of that which is important for a clinician to be part of, but really it's about supporting that person and supporting their home care team, their family. And if we can take the lessons that we've learned from those aspects of behavioral health change and mental health support and recovery, and spread that to more areas of healthcare where peer-to-peer support could make a difference. I'd also love to marry that aspect of peer-to-peer healthcare with the lessons that have been learned in personal science, in that lots of people are tracking their health. And in the last 10 years, we've gotten many more devices and tools that we can use to track our own health. And that is another opportunity that I don't think is being fully leveraged. where what do we do with all of this data that is being collected by us, for us, around us, and that is affecting decisions that we make about what we eat and when we eat and how we sleep and what exercise do we get, and how might we marry these two megatrends of people connecting with each other, connecting with information and data, and the skills that you can gain as a personal scientist so that people have the tools and training that they need to live their best lives. That's what I'm super excited about. And that's why I think the patient-led revolution has so many aspects to it. It has that daily life aspect to it, where how do you live your best life? How do you optimize? But also, when you have that personal earthquake of a life-changing diagnosis and you really need the scientists and the doctors to come and help you, there's also a role for the patient-led revolution in that aspect of healthcare.
Yeah, it is. It's incredibly exciting. And I love how you've pointed out that people have access to data, but combining that with access to community is such an important corollary or equally important part of getting to where you want to go in terms of accomplishing your goals. So that's really good to point out. I tend to be the accumulate data on self. And I think just taking action on that as part of being a part of that community. Susanna, with the time we have left, you know, obviously your book is titled Rebel Health, and this is a revolution, really, right? It's already taken place. What advice or anything that we haven't had a chance to talk about would you want to share with our listeners who are really trying to, you know, get the best of all worlds, you know, seek their medical care, do what they're told, do the right thing, live healthy, live long? What advice do you have for people to be rebels?
I want everyone to know that no matter what you face, you are not alone. There are people who would love to help you if only they knew how to find you. It takes courage to raise your hand and say, I need help. It takes courage to be completely honest about what's going on with you. But that's the way forward. If you need to do that in a setting that's anonymous, go for it. If it's something that you really just want to talk to one person about, you are part of the revolution in that case as well.
That's so helpful. And it is just amazing that we are in an era where nobody has to feel alone. Obviously, a lot of people do. So thank you for that and for reminding people to just seek that out. Susanna, for people who want to learn more about you and your work, where can they find you?
I have a website, susannafox.com. And I'm still on a lot of the social media platforms. You can find me. And my book is available everywhere where books are sold.
Well, thank you so much. Thanks for all the work that you do. I think this is intriguing. And to have been there for decades tracking this whole revolution as it's been taking place and kind of breaking that down in a very broken down categorical way as you have to really organize all that information is really just a fascinating perspective. So thank you for all the work that you do.
It's been an honor to collect these stories and try to represent the patients and survivors and caregivers who have shared so much with me over the years.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode and share it with a friend. Until next time, do something to help improve your whole health naturally.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of any entities they represent.